Hello everyone. This is a podcast on Central Asian international relations. Scholars working in and on Central Asia discuss the key events and developments in the region and its engagement with the world. The podcast is part of a project by Dr. Eric McGlinchey and Dr. Shayerbek Juraev on debating international relations of Central Asia. The project is supported by the Holling Center for International Dialogue. The first episode, led by Dr. Eric McGlinchey, will look at the implications for Central Asia of the pullout of the US military from Afghanistan and the evolving Russia-Chinese relations.
Thank you for joining us today. This is a podcast in which we will be talking about Central Asia, Central Asian international relations. My name is Eric McGlinchey. I'm an associate professor of government at the Shah School at George Mason University. I'm joined today by Dr. Farhad Talipov, director of the Caravan of Knowledge Non-Governmental Research Center in Tashkent, Dr. Nursait Niyazbekov, Assistant Professor of International Relations at KIMEP University in Almaty, and Dr. Shayerbek Juraev, Director of Crossroads Central Asia and Postdoctoral Fellow at the OSC Academy in Bishkek. Everybody, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
So there's a number of questions that I'd like to talk about and actually really hear your thoughts as experts in the region, on the region. I think our overall theme today is going to be Central Asia international relations, Central Asia and the great powers. But let's start off with this question. It's certainly a question that I know people here in Washington are very interested about. And that is, there's a lot of talk about the departure of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. This is something that's been going on for quite some time, but now we're talking about an almost complete departure of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And so I was wondering what, if any effect you think this may have on Central Asian international relations once the U.S. drawdown in Afghanistan is complete. Farhad, let's start with you.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this small group. Interesting discussion. Talking about Afghanistan and implications of the overall developments in Afghanistan to Central Asia or Uzbekistan, I should first of all say that it's not so obvious that the American forces will withdraw completely and in a very short period of time. As far as I remember, President Trump, didn't make a secret that it's not just simple withdrawal, unconditional. He said that it was conditional. So this withdrawal would depend on the situation in Afghanistan, on the progress of communication and negotiations with Taliban or between Taliban and the government, between Taliban and the U.S. side, and so on and so on. So much depends on the progress of these negotiations. And if there is progress, and if everything goes as planned, then perhaps withdrawal will take place. Otherwise, as President Trump indicated the situation, probably the forces will stay longer. When it comes to Uzbekistan's position, you know well that in March 2018, we in Tashkent, there was big international conference on Afghanistan where more than representatives of 20 countries participated, including international organizations. The conference participants adopted a joint statement in which, among other things, they addressed Taliban with the statement that Taliban should stop fighting, stop terrorist actions, and go to negotiation table and negotiate with the government, and so on and so on. I think this is quite unique because the international document of this kind directly addresses organization or the people who used to be portrayed terrorists. This conference indicated a significant shift in Uzbekistan's foreign policy towards Afghanistan, Uzbekistan's position towards Afghanistan. First, as President Mirziyoyev during that conference said, Afghanistan is no longer considered as the source of threat as the territory from which different terrorist and extremist threats emanate. And Uzbekistan doesn't look at Afghanistan from such point of view. But Afghanistan for Uzbekistan, he said, is the area of opportunities that Uzbekistan should cooperate with Afghanistan. This is interesting shift, let's say, in Uzbekistan's position. Mirziyoyev indicated three different interrelated levels to deal with Afghanistan. First, intra-Afghan process. It's national level. Second, it should be dealt with on the regional level, that regional countries, neighbors of Afghanistan, should be more actively engaged. And finally, because the problem is about global threat of terrorism, it should be dealt with on the global level. So these three levels were indicated by Mirziyoyev when he, described, if you want, the position of Uzbekistan.
I want to pick up on a point you made, Farhat, which is you mentioned that there has to be, or at least from the point of view of Uzbekistan, regional governments, regional states play a very large role in helping to shape the future, both of Afghanistan, but also of Afghanistan's relations within the region. So Nirsai, picking up on that, on Farhat's point there, what role, if anything, do you see Kazakhstan having here in this post-United States drawdown in Afghanistan? I know, because of course, Kazakhstan does not share the border with Afghanistan like Uzbekistan does, so perhaps the imperatives are less. Nonetheless, Kazakhstan is a major player in the region. So what, if any, role do you see Kazakhstan playing in this post-US drawdown period?
Thank you, Eric. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for having me. It's a pleasure to be in this fascinating discussion. For Kazakhstan, Afghanistan has always been a country that raised two major concerns, or two major, let's say, goals: the security aspect and the trade aspect. So while the United States was engaged in Afghanistan, for Kazakhstan, it looked like the presence of the U.S. in Afghanistan brought about stability in the region in terms of the spread of terrorism. So I'm talking about the security dimension, in terms of building the state, in terms of ensuring peaceful trade between the countries and development, regional development. As for the trade dimension, probably it's not a secret to you guys that Kazakhstan has been viewing Afghanistan as a recipient of Kazakhstani goods. We're talking about wheat, particularly. So Kazakhstan has been a major exporter of wheat to Afghanistan. And while it is not directly engaged with Afghanistan in any other way, President Tokayev, as well as Nazarbayev, have always been talking about ensuring peace and stability in Afghanistan, being aware of the security threats emanating from Afghanistan and the rise of the terrorism in Central Asia, the two terrorist, oh, not two actually, more than two instances of terrorist attacks in Kazakhstan have been linked by the security agencies to Afghanistan. So definitely the fact that the United States is disengaging from Afghanistan, for Kazakhstan, it has two implications. One is short run and one is the long run implication. In the short run, Kazakhstan will not be affected in any ways by that. So Afghanistan will continue to receive Kazakhstani aid, Kazakhstani goods. Kazakhstan has established Kazakhstani aid agency or something like that, which is providing foreign aid to countries in need, and Afghanistan is one of them. So like I said, in the short run, the withdrawal of US from Afghanistan will not have any significant effects on Kazakhstan. But in the long run, as I mentioned earlier, there is the security dimension. The risk of the growth of terrorism, the risk of the reappearance of terrorism emanating from the Taliban, emanating from the ISIS, all of that could a little concern the government of Kazakhstan, fearful of the potential spread of terrorism from Afghanistan in the long run.
Shire, I know you're also a citizen of a country that played host to, outside of Afghanistan, the largest, longest standing U.S. military presence in the region, which is the Manas Transit Center. You know, of course, the United States has been out of Manas for over 6 years now. But still, from the point of view of Kyrgyzstan, what implications, if anything, does the U.S. drawdown in Afghanistan have for Kyrgyzstan?
Well, compared to other Central Asian states, I think Kyrgyzstan is most likely the least affected by the developments in Afghanistan, including the drawdown of the U.S. forces from Afghanistan. We don't have borders with Afghanistan, and unlike Kazakhstan, we have less ability to and less interest to actively engage with Afghanistan, be it in terms of trade or demonstrating our capabilities to contribute to international efforts to assist or support Afghanistan. Kyrgyzstan viewed the developments in Afghanistan through the prism of Kyrgyz-US relations. The military base in Kyrgyzstan was the biggest and only thing that mattered for us in all this issue. If you look at the public discourse in Kyrgyzstan, there is almost nothing on Afghanistan, political or military developments in Afghanistan. So the short answer would be that Kyrgyzstan has already passed through that stage. For us, the chapter is closed. U.S. forces are no more in Kyrgyzstan. And the eventual disappearance of the U.S. military from Afghanistan, I think, would be additional relief for current Kyrgyz government. Confrontation between the United States and Russia has been a source of nervousness, source of tension. I think the less U.S. is engaged and active in Kyrgyzstan, the less headache we have.
I mean, that's interesting. Thank you all for your contributions. In my own discussions with U.S. government colleagues, I essentially shared a very similar position to yours, Shire, in that for many Central Asian countries, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, the U.S. drawdown has already happened, right? I mean, the U.S. drawdown, the United States has been out of Uzbekistan since 2005, has left K2. The United States has been out of Kyrgyzstan since 2014. The United States militarily was really never much of a presence in Kazakhstan. Nurse Said, your point about the potential rise of terrorism is actually an interesting one, and one I'd like to dig down a little bit more into, and I'll put my cards on the table. I am somewhat dubious about claims that the terror, the actually relatively rare events of terror that we see in Central Asia are related to events in Afghanistan. But Nursay, you directly link this. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about the terror that you've seen in Kazakhstan and those links to Afghanistan. And then Farhat, I'd like to pose the same question to you after Nursay talks. Thanks.
Well, when the terrorist attacks happened in Kazakhstan, the National Security Committee, as well as any other special agencies, were keen to attribute, they were keen to trace those instances to the Afghan roots. The Hizbut Tahrir organization, Tablighi Jamaat, many of the banned organizations, Soldiers of Khalifat, a bunch of these organizations were traced not only to Afghanistan, but also to Egypt, to Syria. And Afghanistan is the usual suspect in that sense. And our government likes to point fingers at Afghanistan and to view Afghanistan as a scapegoat, even if there is no direct proof that Afghan Taliban or any other organizations are anyhow linked to the Kazakhstani terrorist attacks. The government nevertheless likes to use Afghanistan as the source of potential threats.
So interesting. So to the extent that maybe Afghanistan's involved here, Afghanistan's involved in the sense that the Kazakh government has invoked Afghanistan, despite the fact that there might not be any evidence actually linking these terror threats to Afghanistan. Well, thank you for that clarification. Farhat, what about in Uzbekistan? I mean, things in Uzbekistan have been I think, somewhat quiet on this front for a while. But what about this potential for increased terror with the U.S. drawdown from Afghanistan?
When I analyze the possible or actual challenges to security of Uzbekistan or Central Asia stemming from Afghanistan territory, I often try to compare the situation right after 9/11 and now. The peak of threats, terrorist threat, was that time. I mean, after 9/11, it's not by accident that it's then where that the U.S. troops were involved. I mean, the U.S. contingent was deployed in Uzbekistan, Karshiki too, in on the Manas airport, and so on and so on. Even then, the you know, the threat from Afghanistan, let's say from Taliban, was not at the degree to threaten Central Asia, or in particular Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan forces were put on alert. I mean, they were ready to mobilize and take measures in case of severe threat, in case of violation of border, and if some fighters from Afghanistan cross the border and so on. Even then, when, as we perceive, threat was of red color, as we strategists color them. I mean, threat was most severe. Even then, there was no attack. There was no incidents, border incidents. And there was no serious dramatic changes in the sphere of you know, regional and national security. That's why if then in 2001, 2002, and throughout the overall enduring freedom operation period, we didn't face any serious threat, what should we say about the state of threat or challenges today? I think the level of threat as compared to 9/11 or 2001 situation is much, much lower. That's why I think we should, it doesn't mean that we should be calm and, you know, ignore any threats, any tokens of challenges from Afghanistan. But nevertheless, the degree of threat is much lower.
I see Shire has raised his hand. He had a point that he wanted to jump in here, I think.
Well, yeah, just to add 2 cents here, I think there are two extremes. On the one hand, we acknowledge that there is this discourse of danger, very much government-sponsored, and you can name several governments who are interested in maintaining this discourse. At the same time, I think we should be careful to not to move to the different extreme. We have to acknowledge that there are a couple of other variables that may, in the long term, influence the developments. And the first of all, that's the political developments in Afghanistan. And second, political developments in Central Asian states. As long as we have the situation as of now, we may safely say that whatever happens in Afghanistan seem to be quite detached from the developments in Central Asia. However, I think we're all aware that Afghanistan is an area with great liberty of different warlords, with the arms proliferation, and Central Asia is indeed very close geographically. So certain developments in Tajikistan or in Turkmenistan, say the immediate bordering countries with Afghanistan, might create at some point situation conducive for the proliferation of security risks.
Quick comments.
Yes, there's a, please, yes.
One quick comment that came to my mind about the threat of Afghanistan. It's not only terrorism, which we've been discussing quite extensively. It's also the threat of organized crime. And the drug trafficking is a big issue. Organized crimes in Kazakhstan have flourished during the times when the U.S. was not in Afghanistan. And there were very often reportings of the customs stopping some big transit routes of the drugs out of Afghanistan. So that's one thing. And the second comment I'd like to make is it actually resonates with what Shahri Bek said, what he calls as the dimension of the danger. I would like to call as an issue of the threat deficit. Kazakhstan may be experiencing a threat deficit in one way or another after the COVID-19 pandemic has been totally destroyed. They are looking, this is actually a normal thing, I think, nowadays in international relations. And for Kazakhstan, that vacuum of the threat could be filled by, again, securitization dialogue, securitization discourse. And when the US leaves from Afghanistan, if the things go really bad in Afghanistan after that, Kazakhstan could immediately take on that instance and say, look, this is what happened in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, things are getting worse and worse. So Kazakhstan should securitize. And that might eventually affect even the further autocratization scenarios in Kazakhstan. Thank you.
Interesting. Yeah, no, these are all really fantastic points. Picking up on this comment about it's not just terror that's a challenge that Nursayed and Shire, you guys both mentioned. You know, I've spent time in Ishkashim and Harog in Gorno-Badakhshan, right on that border with Afghanistan. And, the concern wasn't so much terror. The concern was narcotics. Ishkashim was a major point of narcotics distribution coming up through Afghanistan. I guess what's interesting for me is what happens to these economies once, the security that had been provided by the United States to a certain extent is gone. What happens to the drug trade? And what impact does that have on the Central Asian states if we do see a massive uptick in the drug trade, if we see a decrease in security in the region? So that, I think that's a fantastic point and one that we have to keep in mind. We so often think about terror, but there's all these other things that can happen when we see security vacuums. Well, thank you. That's a really helpful conversation. It's somewhat reassuring to hear that you guys collectively don't necessarily anticipate terror to be a threat, but I think you guys have given us a lot of reasons to be somewhat sober in our analysis and to actually anticipate that, you know, there could be trouble down the road. One thing that's for sure is once the United States leaves Afghanistan, if it's not already apparent, there will be two primary regional and great powers left in the region. And they're never going to leave, right? Because they can't leave. They're right there. There's Russia and there's China. Traditionally, I think, at least in the analysis here that I see in the United States, we see people portraying Russia as being the power that has a monopoly over the security realm, and China as the power that increasingly has a monopoly over the economic realm. And this poses a really challenging balance, I think, for Central Asian countries, how to navigate these two great powers that both have legitimate claims to be the ascendant power in the region. So I was curious what you guys think about future relations between Russia and China, and whether or not, just to go straight to the point, whether or not you anticipate that there might be some kind of conflict that emerges as China becomes economically more powerful and Russia's star potentially begins to wane a little bit in the region. Is there a potential for conflict between these two great powers? Anyone can jump in. Who would like to go first with that one?
For Kazakhstan, as I've mentioned in my brief policy paper on Kazakhstan's foreign policy, what matters right now more than anything else, especially in the post-COVID times, is pragmatic development, pragmatic ties, pragmatic relationships, not only with the great powers, regional and international, but with any other neighboring countries. And considering the fact that both China and Russia are becoming more and more apparent and more visible in the region, both geopolitically and economically, I think that Kazakhstan would be happy to receive any hand that is about to help Kazakhstan. So if we're talking about Russia, that was always a geopolitical interest, security interest. But with China, it's, again, economics. It's, again, about stability in the region, securing the Chinese interests. And the competition between China and Russia, I wouldn't say competition. I'd rather say collaboration. I don't think that Kazakhstan is trying to somehow get as much as they can in the competition between the two countries. We shouldn't forget that both that Kazakhstan as well as the two other countries are members of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And within the framework of that organization, and considering the growing rapprochement between the three countries, I think that we shouldn't be watching any tension stemming up. Quite the opposite. Considering the disengagement of the U.S., we should be seeing more and more collaboration between the great powers plus Kazakhstan. Thank you.
Instead of a competitive great game, we see kind of a cooperative environment going on here. You're blowing apart the analogy. It's a little less kind of confrontational, but probably closer to reality. Thank you, Nirsa. Thank you, Nirsa. Farhad, what the view from Uzbekistan?
Well, again, from comparative perspective, if you look at Kremlin's policy, Kremlin's position vis-a-vis Russia or China on one hand, and what a policy Mr. Mirziyoyev is pursuing today, you can see some differences. Karimov positioned himself as a relatively more independent leader and was able to keep a reasonable distance from Russia and from China. And, understanding well that diversification of foreign economic and foreign political orientations is important for Uzbekistan, for newly independent, Uzbekistan. There are many examples which confirm such a policy which Karimov pursued. For instance, just a couple of examples. After Andijan events, in 2005. Pakistan joined the then existed Euraziz organization. It's no longer existing, but then there was Euraziz, Eurasian Economic Community, as distinguished from the currently existing Eurasian Economic Union. So Uzbekistan joined that organization because that membership was actually the security measure, the protective measure against alleged Western or American threats about overthrowing the government in Uzbekistan. The government and President Karimov himself wrongly evaluated that there was American hand behind Akromiya organization, which committed the terrorist action in Andijan. There was a color revolution attempt and things like that. And afterwards, Karimov, as a protective measure, decided to join the Euraziz. But membership of Uzbekistan in Euraziz didn't last more than 2 years. Uzbekistan joined in 2006. And in 2008, Uzbekistan stopped its membership in the Euraziz. And in some years, in 2012, withdrew from ODKB, Organization for Security and Collective Security Organization of the CIS countries. So these couple of examples just illustrate relatively independent and stronger policy which Karimov pursued. Today, Mirziyoyev pursues slightly more pro-Russian policy. Also, there are several examples which also confirm such a shift, let's say, such a turn in Uzbekistan's foreign policy in favor of Russia, let's say. Mirziyoyev decided to join the Eurasian Economic Union with the status of observer. This simple fact, this single fact, also demonstrates that Uzbekistan takes this turn. But recently, Foreign Minister of Uzbekistan, Kamilov, said in all of we try to come to agreement with Russia on migration, labor migrants issue, to sign some agreement, things like that. But Russian side, insisted that why you need such an agreement? Just join the Eurasian Economic Union as a full member, then there will be no problem with labor migrants. Thereby, he just uncovered the existence of invisible pressure on the part of Russia. This pressure should be remembered when we analyze the seemingly pro-Russian course in the foreign policy of Uzbekistan. When it comes to China, I think it's not about balance of power position on the part of Uzbekistan. Mirziyoyev several times expressed full support to the BRI concept, BRI initiative, Chinese initiative, Belt and Road. And his predecessor also supported this concept fully. So, because as long as the BRI details, let's say, projects, infrastructure, undertakings, etc., transport, meets the interests of Uzbekistan, Uzbekistan, of course, supports. So that's why it's not about, it's not so much maneuvering of Uzbekistan between Russia and China as about Russia-China relationships.
Thank you. Thank you, Farhad. Shire, I do want to give you a chance to weigh in here. And just for our listeners, to perhaps note the obvious, Dr. Talipov and Dr. Niyazbekov are talking from the point of view of Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, which, no offense to Kyrgyzstan, but I mean, these are the two economic powers of Central Asia, and also particularly, you know, with regards historically to Uzbekistan, and increasingly with regards to Kazakhstan, the military powers of Central Asia. Kyrgyzstan is quite different, right, in that the economy is much smaller, the population smaller, and the military capabilities of Kyrgyzstan are much smaller. So I would imagine, Shire, that the calculations that the Kyrgyz government faces with this relationship, interrelationship between China and Russia, are probably different than the considerations that the economically and militarily more powerful Uzbek and Kazakh governments faces. So what's the strategy of Kyrgyzstan, do you think?
Well, indeed, Kyrgyzstan stands out, probably together with Tajikistan partly, for much greater dependence on both Russia and China. It's not a secret that Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan have huge debts to China. That grew particularly in the past 10 years. And there are lots of reports listing Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan among the countries under high risk of not being able to pay their debts to China. So in that sense, we stand out. And at the same time, Kyrgyzstan is probably the most loyal ally of Russia in the region. Particularly, that's been evident since President Atambayev and President Jeenbekov is continuing that rhetoric that Russia is the strategic partner of Kyrgyzstan, and that mantra gets repeated nearly in every foreign policy-related speech. So for Kyrgyzstan, any tension between Russia and China would be a disaster. But there are two things that I would like to mention. First, as Nursait and Farhad mentioned, I don't think that we are going to see escalation of tension between Russia and China any soon in the region, particularly because there is the West, there is Europe and the United States that is creating problems for both of them, with Russia and China. And I don't simply see any ground on which Russia and China would have competing claims, competing interests overall and particularly in the region. However, if time comes when China is increasingly aggressive politically or Russia is increasingly interested in squeezing out China economically in the region, I think Kyrgyzstan wouldn't have much choice. Current Kyrgyz government will most likely remain ally of Russia because particularly the labor migrants also make Russia not only political or geopolitical power, but also a huge economic factor. And the migrants matter for Kyrgyz economy probably much greater than the huge Chinese loans that come to the government and get invested into roads. So I don't think that there will be a huge headache for Kyrgyzstan, but for as a small state, as a poor state, we would prefer both China and Russia remain as amicable, as cooperative as we see them today.
Thank you. For our listeners, this is the first of at least two podcasts that we plan on conducting. So I would like to thank our participants, Dr. Filipov, Dr. Niazbekov, Dr. Jiraiya, for joining us today. Let me give the last word to Dr. Jiraiya. But again, for me, thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation today. Dr. Jiraiya?
Thank you, Eric, very much for hosting this podcast and throwing questions. It's been a very interesting discussion, and I really hope that we will be able to continue with both Farhad and Nursaid, and possibly adding more of Central Asian scholars, bringing them together with the US-based Russian, European, Chinese scholars to discuss the most interesting and current issues on international relations of Central Asia. Yeah, thank you very much.